Hoot. Hoot. Hoot.
Hoot. Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Yes, you are hearing the most angelic voice in all of professional wrestling. After 6-8 weeks of the Good Brothers muting me, I'm fucking back. And you know what? I'm the fucking host. And ain't nobody gonna mute Rocky Romero no more, because I've just taken over this podcast. It's all mine. Fuck the Good Brothers. Emilio, you're cool. You can stay because you're the only one I like. Crack a beer, take off your pants, and welcome to the hashtag worst podcast in all of professional sports. Welcome to Talk and Shop. And we have got a loaded show for you, because not only have we confirmed one guest, but we just got off the phone with a living legend. And now we have two guests. The first one is a legend, living barely, but he's... You may know him from, his illustrious comedy career, but you also may know him because we're almost coming up on the one-year anniversary of Talking Shop-a-Mania 2, where he stabbed Chavo Guerrero with a lightsaber. The one, the only, Taylor Williamson is in the house. What's
this
up, Taylor?
This is great. This is the first time I've ever appeared on something in the last, 8 years that no one's mentioned America's Got Talent. They just say, he's the guy who murdered Chavo Guerrero.
That's Jr. The most important thing, I feel like, in your career of all time.
That's how I know him. I don't know him from America's Got Talent. I've never even seen the brother perform stand-up. I just know that he killed Chavo Guerrero.
I know.
I heard you killed it. Yeah, thanks. I've been doing comedy a long time. No. Chavo. You killed Chavo.
No, you literally killed Chavo.
I heard you killed last week. You get the joke. You
wrote it. Yeah, no, we get it.
You wrote it. You get it.
Of course, Emilio, our fantastic producer, we were just putting Emilio over because he doesn't get enough cred for actually making this podcast sound great. He cuts out a lot of the shit that would probably get us into a lot of trouble. So we can never fucking do anything bad to Emilio, because he has all the tapes and all the footage. He will hold that over our head, maybe blackmail us. We don't know, but it's something to always consider and think about. So we got to treat Emilio good. That's pretty
thousands and thousands of hours of just brother bullshit I have just stored on my hard drive.
And so he can release it 30 years from now.
I could.
He could take you down anywhere, in your retirement home. You're in the nursing home. He could cancel you from the nursing home.
That's it. We're only 4 years apart in age-wise, but I'll be like, now's the time to just hang this over a zoo car's head.
The Good Brothers will be long gone by then. For sure. It doesn't matter,
They're still alive?
Barely.
Every time I've seen them in real life, I'm like, I'm saying this because I care about you. It seems like you're trying not to be alive for a very, very long time.
Do you remember the first time that I took you to meet the Good Brothers and we went to, Honda Center in Anaheim, Taylor? And I was like, do you want to go to Raw? And you were like, yeah, let's go to Raw. How long were we even there? Maybe an hour, it felt like 2 hours. Not even that.
You dropped, I'm sure we talked about this on the previous episode, but such a good story. People want to hear it again. You dropped me off in catering. You're like, I'll be right back. And you just left me in WWE catering. And I'm just some jabroni guy standing around, and people come up, they just assume you belong there,
Right,
Cesaro's like, hey man. And Randy Orton's just eating food. And I'm like, hey, I since met his brother and he's the coolest guy, but I heard your brother's a really good dude. And he's funny. And he's like, thanks man. And I'm just trying to think of things to say, hey, Goldust, cool man, I'm just like,
did anybody know you or recognize you? A couple people.
Alicia Fox said, do I know you from somewhere? And right. Then I was like, I don't know, because I'm trying not to be I'm a famous comedian, That's what if you have to tell somebody you're a famous comedian, it means you're not, And so I was like, I don't know, I'm just trying not to, get you in trouble, basically, Right. You don't even work there, I'm trying not to get you fired.
Me?
She's like, do I know you from somewhere? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, oh, okay. Then she walked away and I was like, I'm a comedian. And then I got her back and then she never talked to me again. But absolutely no one knew who I was.
Okay. But then what happened? So then I left you there. I think I went to go see like Finn Balor. And then I was like, then I just started making the rounds, you know, and it was like of all my friends and stuff that I got up there. But then I found
all your friends in their underwear with grease all over them. Right. It's so funny. Just like, he's like, John, this is Fergal. And he's just like sweaty man with all these abs in his underwear. I'm like, oh, hey, nice.
I know wrestling is so fucking weird, but anyway,
it's just pretend like it's normal. Like I'm just like, yeah. Can you imagine like someone who doesn't watch wrestling just in this environment, just like pretending like that's normal?
Wait, and, Emilio's, you're gonna love to hear what the Good Brothers actually do next. So like,
that's what I was gonna ask. So now Rocky leaves you for like an hour, so you're left to your own devices. Did you eat the catering? Because at the time, the catering was pretty delicious.
Yeah, and I knew Cesaro because I met him once before and he remembered me and that made me happy. And I was at an autograph signing and I was 14. No, but like, I got to meet him once. He's a really goofy guy. And I just want to brag that he acknowledged my existence. And then somebody who worked on like Scooby-Doo WWF movie knew who I was. Weird people backstage. I'm just bragging. A couple people, listen, I'm a big deal.
Alicia Fox, more importantly.
Alicia Fox.
Yeah, a big fan of mine, and likewise. And so then what happened? What was the question?
So how did you meet the Good Brothers then? Because you saw Ferg, so, and you
well,
saw his
yeah, I introduced you, well, I introduced you to the Good Brothers first. Then I went and fucked off, right? And yeah. then I came back, and then it was like, and then if you remember better than I do, please tell the story. But they were like, oh shit, we just got booked on like whatever the next show is somewhere, and they're telling us we have to go to the airport like right now. So we didn't even get to hang out. We weren't even there for very long. So then they're like, we have a rental car. They're like, hey Taylor, we just met you, but can you drop off our rental car for us? And Taylor's like, he's such a nice guy, he just goes, yeah.
I'm just like, am I about to get arrested? I literally like, is it illegal to drop off someone else's rental car? I literally was scared. I'm going to go, they're going to think I stole a rental car. But who steals it and drops it off politely, though? I didn't think about that. But I was like, is this one of these pranks that you kids do? Because I think AJ like took a plane helicopter with John Cena or something.
Oh,
was that
yeah.
Part of it?
Some shit like something.
Like, I feel like they were left stranded. Like, or, I don't know what happened. Maybe that's a different story. But they were like, we have to we're not going to make our flight on time if we have to drop a rental car first. So Rocky was like, I'll drive you guys to the airport. Taylor, drop off the rental car. And then you were like, I'll pick you up after. I'm like, am I ever going to, we carpooled down to Anaheim. I'm like, am I going to be living in Anaheim for the rest of my life? I'm just too lazy to walk home.
So. No, you had a stolen car. You could have done whatever you wanted.
That's a good point. I just drove into Mexico.
You really could have kept the car just to mess with them.
Yeah,
too.
That would have been the ultimate rib.
I couldn't get over how much they trust some fucking random guy. Like, yeah, I'll, your friends with Rocky? You must be a good person.
Especially a comedian. I would never trust a comedian with a rental car.
Yeah, I've crashed so many cars.
Same.
Emilio, same. Too. So it's the same.
And also, my car gets crashed into. Like, I have bad luck both ways. Like, never be in a car with me or around me. But no, so we did it.
Me and you will never be in the same car together.
Yeah,
we're
oh my God. Yeah, please don't do that. Emilio has fire hydrants in the middle of the night, just randomly.
He just finds them. He just walks up to them and just
found them. I was like, I'm gonna hit
with this car.
Have you set off the water thing? Shooting?
No, thank God. Could you imagine? I did. I would have never been allowed to go back to wherever we were for Gallows's thing.
I didn't even think about that. That was a possibility. But yeah, you could. That thing could have been going off, and it was like right in like the neighbor's front yard. Like he would have been so pissed. Like.
Right.
The cool thing
about it would have been I really would have made Ethan Page's vlog that day with just could you imagine that visual?
Oh man, what a great with the little picture that they put on there. What is it called?
A little thumbnail.
That would have been an awesome action. Thumbnail. Yeah.
Are you allowed to park there if you knock over the fire hydrant? You cannot park next to it, right?
No, this was in the middle of buttfuck
Georgia. Rural Georgia, where the fucking street is literally this wide. to make a turn.
It's kind of true. It's kind of true. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm from New York. We barely drive anyway, right? Now I live in Staten Island, so I literally use my car just to go to the gym, yoga, church, whatever, right?
How much did it cost you again, Amelia? Because that was an expensive ass.
It was a very expensive accident. That is between me and Brian Myers. I don't know if he wants me to share that information.
Because we don't pay a lot on for Taco Shop, so you definitely came out in the red.
Oh, God, did I come out in the red. I was like, ooh, I have to reevaluate like my decision to work with these guys. No, I'm kidding.
that was your chance to make a break right there. You fucked up.
Hey, you know what? What can I say? You know, the lights and the glitz and the glamour of the behind the scenes of Talking Shop for Mania 2 sold me. I was like, I'm in. I'm here.
Speaking of Talking Shop for Mania 2, so like I said, if you guys want to catch the replay, of course, on Fight TV. But I'm currently writing Talking Shop for Mania 3, and I'm trying to get the guys to okay everything that I've already written so far. I've basically written the first act. Taylor, I wrote you in. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
I wrote you in a pretty big part.
Mo Guerrero. How can he not be in it? He's wanted for murder.
I know. I know. I wrote him in. It's a pretty big part. So I don't know if you're going to accept it. You know.
I'm a big deal again, though. I was really desperate last year, you know?
Yeah. Wait, what the fuck?
I was just asked to be on the finale of America's Got Talent this week. So,
what?
Yeah, special inside scoop. It's never been announced.
Are you so? When is that air?
Now.
When does that air? When is that coming?
I don't know if it's not. Things are taped. It's Wednesday. I filmed it last night. And what? So I'll be making a cameo. I should have worn my Rocky Romero shirt.
Damn. Would you wear? You wear like a Young Buck shirt or something?
No, I wore, no logos. They don't need that, you know?
Okay.
I wore like a nice.
I would have signed off on it.
You know? You're like, of course. No, I just wore a normal thing. But so I'm too big to do your thing now. But that's my way of saying pay me more.
Fuck. It's okay. We'll get Ron Funches. He'll do it.
Whoa.
Technically, no. He's going to be a big deal too because he's making his in-ring debut against Tony Deppen in GCW.
Did you see my James Corden show talking about it?
That's so crazy. That is so crazy.
Let me ask you this. Have you put Betty in it, my dog? Then I'll do it.
Absolutely. We'll fly Betty out too.
Betty, I'll tell you this. America's Got Talent producers, I said, can you put Betty in the sketch? And they said strong maybe. That. So I'm going to go back to the Dolby Theater tomorrow just to literally have my dog walk through a scene. I bet they're not going to pay me either, but it's just important that my dog gets to be on TV.
I think, you know, do you have an Instagram for your little doggy, Betty?
Oh, do you mean at Betty the puppy doggy with a Y? My dog has famous people following her.
Oh, that's awesome. Don't follow your dog me. Is over. Your dog is over.
Chick who's on Bizarre Magazine, like a supermodel chick, she follows my dog.
That's good for you.
Can I hit on her through my dog's account? Is that weird?
Yeah. You hit her up as your dog.
Yeah, DM her as the dog and be like, do you want to walk me?
You guys just made me have the most unattractive laugh I've ever heard in my life.
You could be like, I like belly pets and snout kisses.
I'm like, can I lick you sometime? She's like, okay. They're like, what's your address? I come over. I'm like, what? Catfish? Is that catfish if you message a babe through your dog's Instagram?
No, you dress up like one of the furries. Yeah. Like, dress up like a dog.
Oh,
like,
I have one of those in my closet, yeah.
Do it.
I'm a brony.
Yeah, you're a brony. Do you ever go to Brony Fest?
Who hasn't?
Wait, is a brony like the My Little Pony thing?
Guys who
want to make love to people dressed up like My Little Ponies, I think. Can you guys do me a favor?
What?
In 10 minutes, can we not talk about this stuff?
Of course. Let's get it out now before our legendary guest
comes
on later.
So tell us. We've all done it a few times.
Yeah.
So what do you do on this special? Like, are you telling jokes?
Can you tell us or no?
Just be like, hey, this is how it changed my life. I killed Chavo Guerrero on a pay-per-view.
I wish I acknowledged it. Man, if I go back tomorrow, I'll cut a promo with the America's Got Talent backdrop on the red carpet. Challenging Chavo Guerrero's ghost or something. Like,
nice.
Literally, I'll do whatever you need for me on the red carpet if you want.
Nice.
I filmed my dog on the red carpet for like an hour yesterday, just like running around. And then she started digging into it, and I was like, we gotta get out of here. Like, the cleaning lady was like watching, and I was like, and then she's like, I didn't see anything. My dog peed on the floor of the Kodak Theater.
That's awesome. Respect to that dog.
Don't tell me, because they said you can't bring your dog. And I was like, she's an emotional support animal. My air conditioning's broken, which is true. I can't leave my dog at home. And then they said, okay. I said, I promise she'll stay in my backpack. She won't pee or poop anywhere. And then literally she did. I'm lying. I'm a comedian. If anyone from the Kodak Theater is watching this, or Dolby, whatever it's called.
No way, it's true.
So they have like... I think I'm allowed to talk about it. Who cares? I don't care. So I'm like a special... it kind of sucks, actually, for this guy. He's this comedian Josh Blues in the finale. He's a great comedian and stuff. And they pair up, like if you're a rock star. Like, you're going to sing a song with Lenny Kravitz in the finale, you know? Or, like, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. And, like, a comedian. Like, you're going to roast with Joan Rivers. They did that once. So for this poor guy... They're like, you're going to hang out with comedians who lost on America's Got Talent, but you're going to film a funny sketch. So it's like a funny sketch. So that's for awesome. Me, it's huge. Like, I get to be on the finale. Everyone watches this thing. And so I get to be on TV and remind people, hey, I'm Taylor. I'm a comedian. Book me and come watch me live. So I'll get a few months of work out of it, literally just from that one appearance.
Great.
But this, for him, it sucks. Like, you want like a superstar, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm not putting myself down even. Like, if I was him, I would have fought and be like, no, can we call Steve Martin or something, please? You know?
Wait, did they not get like a one hit wonder type of thing for the other people? Like, if you're like a rock star or something like that, or is
they haven't announced, but like Miley Cyrus would go on the show and say, oh shit. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
And this guy,
what about the guy from Puddle of Mud?
The guy from what?
Maybe it would be like the guy from Puddle of Mud and You. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I would be so excited. Can you take it all away?
Right.
You know?
You must be a comedian. That was quick.
It's so funny. It's quick that I love. It's quick that I listened to that full album like a week ago. Unironically, right. I know all the words to every song.
What?
Everything's so blurry, man. You know? Listen. I just want to be the Puddle of Mud of comedy. That's all I want, you know?
That's all anybody's ever wanted, I feel like, out of a comedic career.
Why not? But listen, my point is, I'm doing all the big shows, AGT, Talkin' Shop of Mania. I'm so flattered and honored that you'd like to have me back. It would help me if it was filmed locally, because I don't want
to... It is. It is. We're going to film... I mean, the way I've thought about this, I'm talking about 3 or 4 different locations for this thing.
It's like WrestleMania 2.
It's going to be grand. It's going to be grand.
It is the granddaddy of them all, you know?
Right.
So, Rock, could you give us a little synopsis about Talkin' Shop of Mania 3? Like, because, listen, Taylor's big time. He's big time, so you got to have to sell the brother.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Why would I do it?
I'm still desperate. Just fill a mark and I'll pay you
to get it. I mean, it's really, the concept is way out there. It takes place in the future. It's called Talkin' Shop 3 Return of the Mark. And that's all I can tell you.
Is Taylor the mark? And I mean that in a not disrespectful way, Taylor. I would never call you a mark.
No, there's a bigger mark than Taylor in this, for sure. We've got bigger marks.
Paul Walter Hauser?
No, we already got him for the last one. Thank you. Thanks to Taylor.
Oh, yeah, we got him in.
We got him in.
He's my friend. We got
him.
We got him in.
Shop of Mania 2?
Yeah, he's the final cameo that I think a lot of people missed.
Did you put it in the credits?
I put it in the credits. It's the last cameo of the whole thing. You got to wait to watch it. But we have a fucking... like award-winning actor in this whole thing, and like nobody talks about it somehow. I don't understand.
Well, I mean,
it's like it's the greatest Easter egg cameo of them all.
Can I give you some
constructive criticism?
No, but a suggestion as a fan.
Okay, go ahead.
Why not repost his part and say, "Hey, everybody! In case you missed it, here's the coolest Easter egg from Talkin' Shop of Mania 2."
Ooh,
bite TV. Buy it.
That's like that. Sales right there.
And then he goes a little retweet ski.
Or he just acts like it wasn't him because he doesn't want anybody.
Or he's like, wait, I was a movie star a year ago. Now I'm a super movie star. Yeah. I was a super movie star a year ago. Now I'm still. And I'm like, you were there.
No, we definitely got to post it on the Instagram at Talk and Shop Podcast. So if you want to follow the boys and their adventures on Instagram and the show, maybe we could post that cameo clip on the Talkin' Shop Instagram page.
You got to. And But you, I like that you call it the grand. I think it's a funny slogan if you call it like something you can get away with, like the great great granddaddy of them all, or
great,
something like
great
that.
Great granddaddy of them all, the fourth cousin of the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah, you got to do like that. The great granddaddy's first cousin of them all, or something like that. Yeah. You know,
you have to. You have
the great grandfather of them all. It's whatever you can get away with, you know.
So, Rock, what are these other locations you're thinking about? Because if it's Los Angeles, the clue, I'm there. Fly me in.
Oh yeah, no, it's a lot of LA. I think probably the whole first act is LA, the whole thing. So
it's like Muppets Take Manhattan, pretty much.
Right.
It would just be the Hoots Take LA.
Today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below the waist grooming. It's back to school time, and we want to make sure that you pack the essentials to have the best year yet. The Manscaped 4th Generation Performance Package is just that. It's the perfect package for your package and includes the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Inside, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer, the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, the Crop Reviver Toner, plus two free gifts, the Performance Boxer Briefs, and the Shed Travel Bag. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code HOOT at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code HOOT, H-O-O-T, at manscaped.com. This year, graduate with a degree in clean balls from Manscaped.
Can I do this?
Do it.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, as the not the host of this show... I would like to introduce my friend. He's a WWE Hall of Famer. He's Chickasaw.
This don't look right.
You look great.
You look good. No.
I don't have my glasses on. What's wrong here?
You look beautiful. Listen, don't cut off my. This is live. This is live.
You're kidding now. No, you don't know we're going live, Taylor. Hey guys, who am I with anyway?
Listen. Taylor, finish your introduction, man.
Chickasaw Nation Hall of Famer, Pro Wrestling Hall of Famer. Give it up for Gerald Briscoe.
Yay!
And Gerald, hey. These are my friends Rocky Romero and Emilio Sparks, legendary producer. Legendary New Japan Pro Wrestling star. There you go.
Gerald. I know Rocky, man. He's a stud from way back, man. I know all about him. How do you get in such good company? And Taylor, how do you get in such good company as Rocky and Emilio?
It's because they know I'm friends with you. They're using me to get to you. Let's be honest.
It's true, Gerald. Basically, we invited Taylor on today just so we could get you on.
It's not a joke at all. It's not even
true.
Well, let me tell you something. Taylor told me he was friends with you guys, so I can't have been baiting with him, trying to use him as bait to get me on your show.
Gerald, we could have cut out the middleman. I mean, we could have got rid of Taylor. We should have gone straight to you if we knew that.
Yeah, I mean, we just could have cut out the middleman and just hit up Wes and be like, "Yo, Wes, let's hang out with your dad."
We should have hit up
Rocky.
Wes.
Rocky, wait a minute. You know how his feelings are, man. You know, he's a San Diego boy. You know,
he
grew up in the mean streets of San Diego.
Yeah, the real hard streets of San Diego. Yeah, you're right. My bad.
How did this happen? I connect you all together, and then you're all roasting me. I'm getting my soul is being body slammed and pile driven.
That's right. We wanted to get you here just so we could make fun of you and roast you, Taylor. That's the whole
thing. And speaking of roasting, did Taylor tell you how we met?
No,
I got Conrad Thompson, whatever he does. He does all those podcasts and everything. Anyway, he hired Taylor to do the writing for me and Pat Patterson. And you know what? He had the balls to tell me, guys.
What was that?
He said, "Briscoe, you're too damn boring. You got no story, man." Holy cow. I mean, well, you know, this is a paid writer from Hollywood. I think I'm getting, you know, big time. I mean, he's a roast writer of the year or something like that. I think he made that up.
This is a real pro wrestler. He took offense that I said, listen, here's respect to all of these guys if they're listening, and also even if they're not listening. But it's a roast of Bruce Pritchard. It's Bruce Pritchard, Jeff Jarrett, X-Pac, Medusa, Eric Bischoff, Pat Patterson, rest in peace. Every one of these people has crazy stories that you can make jokes about that are so famous and crazy, from drug abuse to fucking up their career to fucking up their lives to just like things. They're hard times, and you can make fun of them because we're, that's the job of just making fun. Remember that time that your life was terrible, you know, like, and like all these things, material for a year. Gerald, the only thing I could think of making fun of him, the only roast joke I could think of for Gerald is a joke about him discovering Hulk Hogan and Hulk being racist. Like, so, like, there's nothing. Gerald is just, you're a good dude. I'm sorry, Mr.
Bruce. Yeah, well, you know, getting Hogan was one thing. Then I was smart enough to just give him away to Jerry Jarrett, you know?
That's really actually what Gerald does. He discovers Hulk Hogan and gives him away. He discovered Gable Stevenson. That's a shoot right there. Look it up, his Twitter account. He's not saying it, I'm saying it. Who else posted a picture in 2018 with Gable Stevenson?
So what are some of the tangibles that you look for in like a young prospect? Like, what do you see?
Well, you know, they're obviously there's no manual, you know, or we'd all do it. It's just, yeah, you've been around the business all your life. I mean, you know, you've been in dressing rooms, and you hear these guys coming in, and I did a lot of studying of Luther, Danny Hodge, Sputnik Monroe, the Assassins, and a lot of the great stars of the past. And I watch how they come into a locker room. I watch how they conduct themselves. I watched how they went to the ring. I watched their footwork. I watched how they moved in the ring. I watched their personality with the fans going and coming to the ring. And you know what? And you could always tell the stars, because they just handled themselves just a little bit different, but that little bit different stood out like a sore toe to me. So I tried to grab a lot of those traits of those guys, you know, during my career. And I don't think it's much different when you go into a college wrestling tournament, and you know, you do a little research on guys, and you know, I mean, Gable, I mean, he was a no-brainer. He grew up in Minnesota, you know, he went to University of Minnesota, and I actually knew Gable before he got to University of Minnesota. The year before he arrived at the scene, you know how all these kids, they announce where they're going to college and everything. So we're in, I believe it was St. Louis, Missouri, at the NCAA wrestling tournament. And so Gable was going to announce which school he was going to. And it came down between two schools, brother. It come down between the University of Minnesota Gophers and my school, Oklahoma State University. So, of course, I'm waiting. You know, I want him to announce Oklahoma State University. And I could see the kid was a worker right away because, you know, the way he was going for the hats, you know. And finally, he come out with that maroon, the golden gopher hat. Shortly after that, and just gave him a little grief, and I said, man, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, maybe we can help you. And he said, I've always been a WWE fan. He said, that's the reason I come to Minnesota, because of Brock Lesnar. And I said, holy shit, he ain't gonna be a hard recruit, you know. It's already there, you know, mindset and everything. So it didn't take it, but you're right, going in. I use the same mindset as I did studying these stars in my career as I do these kids. I watch their footwork. I watch the interaction with the teammates. I watch the interaction with their opponents. If they get a bad call with them, what kind of temperament do they have? And, you know, how they handle the situation? Do they panic? And make another mistake. I watch all that, and then I watch how they interact with the fans. And I love, you know, every time I go to the tournament, I get invited on the floor. But you know what? I learned from being a wrestler myself. The first place you go when you leave that mat is to mom and dad up in the stand. So I could get more information about a prospect by sitting just in his team area and just eavesdropping on what the fans are saying. And eventually I know he's going to come down to mom and dad. So when I first go, I kind of scan, you know, I already know who I'm going to look at. And a lot of times there's surprises and I got to readjust my thinking, but that's the fun part of doing it. You know, and does everybody make it? No. And do I get everybody? You know, it's like fishing out here in the Gulf of Mexico. You're going to throw a line out there. You're going to catch a big one someday, and then you're going to catch a little one someday. Some days you ain't going to catch any of them, you know. So I liken it to that, you know. So, but it's so much fun, and it's really a lot of fun to see these guys get successful and make it and become a star in amateur wrestling. And brother, if you could become a star like Gable did, and a couple of other guys, Kerr did too to a certain degree, and Brock, because everything was so limited back in his days, you know, for what he did. I mean, he was known, you know. I mean, he was no secret either because he was such a beast, you know. And, of course, top tens and ESPNs and all those sport networks, of course, would pick up on him there. I just can't imagine what his presence would have been if there had been internet back in Brock's day, you know.
Right, I mean, right.
I mean, it would have been wild, you know. But it's always great to get somebody that and it's not a requirement. And a lie, I catch a lot of grief. It's not a requirement that they've been a lifelong fan. You know, they're athletes. And, you know, I won't get down on people, this, you know, if they're All-American or not. But, you know, here sometimes you got two-time All-American, which means one thing, he's one of the best in the country, you know. And so they get down on them, you know, like, you know, you're not doing the right thing on social media. So when I start recruiting these guys, I make sure they mind their P's and Q's because right. I know what kind of company WWE is. It's a publicly traded company, so they aren't going to have any bad eggs in a deal. So I usually have good citizens because they're college guys and know the concept of teamwork and really know the concept of hard work and practice. And most of all, as you know, Rocky, drilling. Mm-hmm. You got to drill those moods before they become perfect, you know. And they say they do that all their lives. So they're coachable. So that's what the coaches learn.
Mr. Briscoe, I mean, it's really awesome just to have you here and be able to chat it up with you because my mentor, and I know he's a good friend of yours, is Tiger Hattori, who's also been a great scout for New Japan Pro Wrestling in the past. And he's kind of been all over. I know you guys have a long history, you know, Tiger spending so many years in Tampa, living there and working there. So anything, I mean, I'd love to talk about Japan a little bit because I'm familiar with it, but like, right. Is there any, the first time you went to Japan, can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I'd rather start about Tiger. Well, let me tell you about Japan when I first went over there, and then I was right out of college. I mean, fresh out of college, and there somebody posted a picture either on one of those Facebooks or Twitter or something like that, me arriving at the airport. You remember those old formal, are you old enough to have enjoyed that arrival where they meet you with these big bouquets of flowers and all
that
stuff?
They were over us by that time, yeah. They didn't. Yeah. There was a guy in a jumpsuit who threw us in a van and then took us to their
hotel. Yeah, well, later years it was the same too. But in the beginning, it was a formal arrival, man. And here I am, a damn little oaky kid, you know, fresh out of the country. My biggest trip, you know, was to Lincoln, Nebraska for a Big 12 wrestling event, you know. So That was my big trip. So here I am going to Tokyo, Japan, brother. So I'm excited. So I arrived there, you know, and I see that pitch and I said, holy cow, I'm with some guy that I'm with the spoiler, Don Jardine, with this European guy, Tinker Todd. I'm with Art Mahalik, was one of the first two-way sports in our business. He played for the Rams, and then in the offseason, he was a wrestler for out on the West Coast there. And during the tour, Crusher and Bruiser came in, and so it was a fun time. But you know, I'm like everybody else. I mean, I'm 21 years old, just fresh out of damn college. I hadn't been in the business 6 months, so.
Wow.
You know how those Japanese kids are. They see me, man. They want to eat me alive, you know. But, you know, they didn't know I could wrestle.
Right.
And so, that first week, it was a struggle. And back in those days, you didn't go for no 3-day or 5-day tour. You went for a 6-week tour.
Wow,
which was a long ass, rough ass tour, you know.
And you guys are wrestling like almost every night, right?
Every damn night.
I heard about those tours.
Bus, we're getting somewhere, man. We're wrestling in places that just got a few grass shacks on it. I mean, literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is back in the late '60s and early '70s, you know.
Wow.
So it was still remote, but. I have, at Oklahoma State, I was fortunate enough, two of the best wrestlers that Oklahoma State University ever had was a recruit from Japan. So I actually ran into one of my teammates over there in a hotel that his family owned that worked for Giant Baba and we were staying at that weekend, you know, and he took me. He was a two-time Olympic champion, you know, and so he was revered as, three people have had ticker tape parade to downtown Tokyo. It was Eisenhower, Yutaki, and I forgot, MacArthur. But they're the only three that ever, and Yutaki, my buddy. So going out with him in Japan was like going out with a god. And I had a great time over there. But, you know, it was like the old days, you know, and then I understand, you know, the dojos are still the same, but these were in matches, man. They had a couple of guys that, you know, if you didn't fight back, they were going to take advantage of you, and I didn't want to be taken advantage of.
Did that happen a lot back in the day where, like, because there was so many, I feel like there back in the day there were so many tough guys in the professional wrestling business.
Wow. Yeah,
so,
great question.
Did you have to do you feel like people would test you often or people would test each other often, especially when finding out if they wanted to, you know, maybe go up or down that night or win or lose?
Back in those days, if you were a college kid coming to the business, I mean, you know, you think the college crowd and the fans thought bad of you. When you got into professional wrestling as a college kid, you were looked at down on from your peers.
Mm.
So because, you know, you're a wrestler, you think you're tough, do you? You know, you're like somebody coming in off the street. It was tough, you know what I mean? And, right. And like you said, I come along, like I said, late 60s, right when all those tough guys, like Sputnik Monroe, Ronnie Etchison, some of those Southern guys, some of those the Torres brothers, the Romeros, and a lot of those guys, man. The Funks, they had the Races, you know, right in the beginning, Larry the Axe, the Harley, and all those guys, man. And I wasn't a big guy coming out. I'm still not going to ever a big guy, but I was coming out, I was like 205 pounds, you know, but right. I could wrestle.
Right. 205
pounds. I just, you know, I had to show them every once in a while. And like I said, I was up in Joplin, Missouri in one of my early matches. This Russian guy, he was about 5'6", and, you know, was one of those typical prototype old Russians, but he was a legit Russian, but he looked the part, you know, like a Nikita Khrushchev type guy. And so short, for you guys, Google Nikita Khrushchev back in the Kennedy days. But anyway, he looked like him, but he was a tough, strong son of a bitch, and he could go a little bit. He knew what he was doing, so. I'm out there working a match, and what really pissed me off is I'm giving my body to the guy. You know, I'm right. out there working the damn match, and all of a sudden, I feel this guy, he's starting, you know, to hook me, roll me up on my shoulder, trying to turn my arm around and get, you know, get the old sugar on me. And I knew what that was. I mean, one thing Danny Hodge, y'all told me when I said, kid, the only gimmick you got is you're a wrestler. Don't ever let anybody out wrestle you. So I felt this guy was trying to out wrestle me. So I'm still working, but because we're coming in at 2 out of 3 falls back those days. So I'm still working. So he turned me, and it's not the finish, but he forced me over, and he was shooting with me, and he was trying to put me to sleep. And I got out, and when I got out, I was backed up into the corner, and I started thinking, well, this guy, he's not playing with me, you know.
So, right.
You know, I went on the attack, you know, and it didn't take long, you know. So, but yeah, you got tested a lot back in those days. But after the word got out, you know, the guys started respecting you a little bit more, and you know, as I gained a little bit more experience, and they saw I was there for business. One thing that always stuck in my mind was, you know, they always said, you know, amateur wrestlers, they hate to lose, you know. You don't hate to lose when there's money involved. And I come from a background where there was no money, you know, mm-hmm. and so any money at all was money involved for me. So
right.
I always understood it was a business, and I didn't mind getting beat, because in the back of my mind, I knew I could beat the hell out of anybody I wanted to. So it was pretty easy for me to put my shoulder down. Just pay me, buddy.
Mr. Briscoe, like, that's one thing that I enjoyed too when I was young. It was like going against a wrestler who maybe like had an amateur background a little bit, or had some kind of background, because they would make you work harder to get each move in or each position. So it made you have to really like trust your instincts and think a little bit more on the spot than just kind of like doing stuff just to do it. Right. So like, I always enjoyed that, because I found out coming out of it, like, whoa, I feel like accomplished. I feel like I had to work for that. Like, now I know what to do if I'm put in that position, or if anybody ever tries to do some kind of, you know, shenanigans to me, I'll know how to react a little bit better. And it made my wrestling tighter and better. So like, I've always loved that style of wrestling, where like, it's not quite a shoot, but it's not quite a work, you know, it's so close to that little line.
It's drilling. It's actually, to me, it's drilling. When everything goes smooth, it's really drilling. And as you found out during your career, you know, that usually if a good wrestler, you kind of give him your movement and your body so he can control it. And usually he's going to give you a move right back. So it is kind of like you're doing a little chain wrestling, you know, as mm-hmm. we call it back in those days. So,
right.
And you can make it look stiff because you're doing something that 99% of the other guys can't do out there, you know. So,
true.
You know, you're a good learner, obviously. And that's, you know, when you drill with somebody on a high level, a Division I level, you're in there, you're going, you're not trying to hurt each other, but you're drilling as hard as you can. So you're basically learning how to work and the body mm-hmm. motions and the momentum, where you can put guys in moves and then let them get right out. And then you're right back into a move. So it's all kind of a, you know, even when you drill in college, it's kind of a, you're kind of working with each other at 99% speed. You know?
Right.
Mr. Briscoe, what are you doing with Wes? Because, you know, Wes is an incredible professional wrestler in his own right. So, like, have you guys ever decided to ever team up? Would you ever want to be his manager? You have such a intense wealth of knowledge for just decades of doing what you've been doing. What's going on with you and Wes together?
Well, we're actually making a show up in South Carolina together in a couple of weekends here. And I'm really looking forward to it. You know, just like my brother and me, and Wes and myself, you want them to make it on their own. But is there critique going on constantly? Sometimes he gets a little pissed at me, and I don't blame him. You know, like I got pissed with my brother too, and it gets pretty intense because I use terminology I can't use on the air when I'm critiquing. But you know, then he'll go back and look at it, and he'll realize, you know, the old man was right, you know. But I don't pretend. I mean, Wes is such a phenomenal athlete, you know. I give him more. It's more of a psychological knowledge I like to give him now than you know, the physical stuff, because man, a kid looks like $1 million, and
he does.
You know, you want a good solid wrestling match, you know, he's the guy for you. He's not one of these showbiz guys, but you know, he was ranked like fifth in the world in professional wakeboarding at one time, so he can do all that goofy stuff too. So not that there's anything wrong with it, you know, but you know, your longevity is cut down a little bit. If there's anything that I would say that I didn't like about that, it would be, you know, I don't care how good you feel that night, you know, 20 years down the road, you ain't going to feel that damn good.
Right.
You brought him to Japan, didn't you, Rocky?
Tiger brought him to Japan. I met him. This was during the time where I think I was kind of on the outs with New Japan. So like I only came like maybe like once while he was there, but yeah, he great guy. He
loved it. He broke his ankle, unfortunately.
That's right.
First round. And he finished the damn match and got home, and his doctor gave him hell, and he really wasn't supposed to make the return, but he, you know, they, typical wrestler, you know, I can do it, you know.
Right.
I mean, not that anybody else wouldn't have, but he did it, you know, went back on a broken ankle, you know. So he got beat, and his abilities was kind of hindered because of the broken ankle there. But mm-hmm. you know, he wants to make mm-hmm. it on his own, and that's the reason in the beginning when he first got out of school, he had some offers to wrestle in universities and stuff like that. So I asked him, I said, what do you want to do? You know, because Steve Kern, a trusted friend of mine, had a school right down the road from us. And Steve said, hey, if he wants to do it, you know, I'll be glad that you can go to this and do that. And he had entered a wakeboard contest when he was like 15 or 16 years old. He saw it on TV, and he tied a rope. I always had trampolines for my boys here, so they could jump around on them. And so he tied a damn ski rope to a trampoline, and he saw the wakeboarding on ESPN. So he got out on that wakeboard and started doing those tricks. And I didn't have time. I just had a jet ski. So we tied a damn rope back to the back of the jet ski. He went out and he started practicing these moves, and one of the big board companies, Hyperlite, was having what they call a grassroots tournament up the road there, where they go around and they look for young guys to sign them up. So Wes was 16, 17 years old. So he went up there and entered the tournament and blew them away, and they signed him right off the bat, man. And he had three different pro model wakeboards and all that stuff that people had out for him. He got a new boat every other year, you know, and a nice wakeboard boat and all that.
That's so incredible.
So he told me when I said, what do you want to do? He said, I kind of want to wakeboard. I kind of want to make a name for myself. But you know what? Wakeboarding's like everything else, man. Once you get hurt and your knee starts going, you know, those sponsors you can't ride for a year, all of a sudden those sponsors start dropping out like crazy. And that wakeboarding is a young man's sport. So you're taking a year off to rehab while this other 15, 16, 17-year-old kid is getting better. And before you know it, you know, it's time to consider retirement at a young age at that point.
That's wild.
But Tiger or Tori, you know, we didn't get to Tiger, man. I love Tiger. I got something. I've been waiting to tell Tiger or Tori's story, man.
Oh, please do.
you know how he got in the business. Has he ever told you that story?
I'm sure he's told me, yeah.
Okay, you know, first of all,
but I'd like Tiger, to hear your version.
Tiger, let's start from the beginning. Tiger's over in Japan. He's wrestling. He's making the Japanese Olympic teams. He's making the world freestyle. He won in a couple of the big world tournaments over there. So I think he's six or seven times, to forgive me, Tiger, if I don't get the numbers right. But I know you're multiple-time world champion, you know. You're a damn stud. but he wanted to learn a little bit more, as good as he was. So he knew he had to come to the United States of America and train. Well, as I mentioned before, and see, this story has a loop into it, because I could go back, so I ain't as ignorant as I look here. So when I talk about Japanese imports, and I have a couple of teammates, and one of those teammates, Tadaki Hata, was Tiger Hattori's coach here in the United States. So finally, he said Tiger got a little bit lazy and didn't want to work, so he knew we had a business down here in Florida. So he called and he said, will you put this guy out of work? And I said, well, I really don't have anything for him, but send him on down. So I talked to Eddie Graham, and he went over to and met Hiro Matsuda. And when Matsuda and I talked to Eddie, we don't have anything except a janitor's job. Would he take this? Now, you got a six-time world champion, and we don't. But he's trying to get along in the United States. So he takes the damn job as a janitor. Of course, you know, with Tadaki's recommendation, my old teammate from Oklahoma State, you know, I got to know him pretty well. So Pat Patterson had just left Florida and went back to New York. So Johnny Valentine was our booker, and Johnny had been in an airplane crash, and he would, you know, couldn't walk, and they were confined to a wheelchair. So travel out of the office was kind of rough for him. So they needed somebody to make the house show. So I own part of the territory, and I booked every night. So Eddie asked me if I'd fulfill Pat's role as assistant booker and help Johnny out a little bit. So I said I'd be glad to. So Mr. Saito and Mr. Sato, two of my favorite, besides Kabuki, and I got to throw him in too, and then several other guys. Man, I wish I could remember all of them, but holy cow, Tenru, man, a lot of friends, a lot of good time with those guys.
Tenru is one of
but
my
anyway,
favorites.
We had Sato and Saito. See, I'm starting to ramble in here, so you got to jump in there. Thank you. Taylor and I got a signal. He holds up his dog. So anyway, Tiger, so we've got Saito and Sato coming in. So they can't speak English very well. You know, they can't speak English at all, basically. So Hattori just had that broken English. So I'm sitting there with Johnny Valentine, and Hattori walks by. And, you know, and of course, Saito especially, he was on the Japanese, I think, Greco-Roman Olympic team. So they knew each other. They knew of each other. And I said, why don't we put the guy, he's a six-time world champion, and Saito and Sato, you know, we can make them, you know, legit Japanese shooters, you know. So, he said, why not? So I ran it by Eddie and Hattori, you know, with his limited English at that time, he was a manager of two Japanese killer guys.
Right. Right.
And so the first angle they were with was Wahoo McDaniels and another guy. So I was doing the production for it. And so I started thinking, you know, Wild West, man, you know. The World War II shows, excuse me. So I'd give Hattori, you know, they were wrestling Wahoo. And I said, just go out there and call him a sneaky, round-eyed American. You know, just total reverse of what the Japanese would get. So, and then a Tori's broken English, he goes, you round eyed American. Thank you, man. People were hot as hell about it. Of course, all the way, the reason they call it, the name that you can be called. Right, you know, right. They love it. But they finished that program out. So, Jack and I wanted to work with them because, you know, they could do the amateur stuff. So we booked a deal with them. At that time, the convention center in Miami was selling out with 12,000 people every Wednesday night. I think we sold
it. Wow. That's incredible.
You know, I mean, it was hot. So they were going under remodeling. So we had to move to Miami Stadium. Now, this is out on Key Biscayne. And basically, time, you know, so they got this long ass, you know, 5,000 seat bleachers. Then they got a pontoon that sets out, they moor down with ropes and all this stuff, and if the wind's blowing, the damn thing is going like this. You know? So we're working against Taito and Tonto and Tiger. So they're deadly afraid of sharks. So, you know, of course, when the guys know, you know how ribs are in the dressing room, hey, man, those Briscoes say they're going to throw you off of that pontoon and there's sharks out there, you know. Oh, please, I can't swim. Tell Mr. Briscoe, please, no. So we went on for about 4 or 5 weeks. We'd always get them right to the end, and then we'd let them stop us, you know. But we had to, you know, in the end, they're going in. Their asses are going in. So, man, I remember when we threw Hattori in. Somebody had to jump in and save the little bastard because he couldn't swim. So I nearly drowned him right off the damn back.
Oh, no. In America, we call that attempted murder.
Well, you don't go.
Speaking the murderer who says, oh, that's attempted murder.
That's not the first time I attempted it either. That's when I ran over with Tommy Rich with that car in Virginia at that time. When Michael Freeburg, Hayes challenged me to run over Tommy Rich, and I did.
Is this an angle, or was this just hanging out?
No, it was two drunk guys behind the wheel of the car.
Drunk driving and murder. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's two felonies right there.
That's a confession. That's attempted murder and drunk driving. These are confessions.
Statue of limitations is already over.
It's got to be, bro.
We're good, Taylor.
Check out Gerald Briscoe's podcast called Confessions with Gerald Briscoe. He admits to all his crimes that he can get away with due to statute of limitation. That's a good show.
That's a good show.
Yeah, man.
Gerald,
confession, true confessions that they use right on TV.
Gerald, what are you up to? Where can people find you? You know, you're doing podcasting now. You're doing all kinds of stuff. I see your Twitter is just blowing up with these teases every week about something big that's going to happen. And then it happens.
Gerald, but not what they expect.
Gerald, do a promo. Cut a promo about all your stuff you got going on.
Well, I was going to throw to you, Taylor. You do the preliminaries, and you tag me in for the hot tag.
There you go.
You do all, because I don't know all the forms and all the call letters.
You got to do it like you're like an actual promo. Like you got to do your best Hulk Hogan brother style promo.
Listen, I'm here.
I never did a Hulk Hogan promo. Or are you talking to Taylor?
I'm talking to Taylor. To Let's make Taylor
right,
do Taylor, it.
Yeah, I want a Hulk Hogan. You know, Rocky, I've been trying to bring out the inner heel of Taylor. And you guys can help. You know, I think, you know, he's such a nice guy. You know, Taylor's a wonderful young man.
Right.
But, you know, it's time and everybody, well, you got to shed that damn puberty and you got to go out and become a man.
Okay.
Well, this is the time for Taylor to come out.
Damn.
And go, oh, okay. No. So you got your opportunity right now to give us your best, let's say, Hollywood Hogan promo. Yeah. Be a heel. Let's see how you can be a heel.
This guy Ron Funch is on in a wrestling match. Maybe I should take this seriously.
There you go.
Listen, as your Jewish advocate, I got you. Okay. Listen, brother, if you like wrestling stories and you like Hall of Famers, you gotta check out Rocky. It doesn't help if you're laughing the whole time. I just started and
you're
laughing.
I'm gonna mute my mic, sorry.
Okay. And I see your face just laughing. Listen.
He's like that, Rocky, I tell you.
Listen, bro. Let me tell you something, brother and sisters and all the genders in between, equality 2021, brother and sister and intersex and they and thems and it's and everybody out there, brothers and everyone and all the things. Gerald Briscoe, Mr. Briscoe, he's a Hall of Famer. He's in all the Hall of Fames. If he's not in the Hall of Fame doesn't matter. It's trash. He's only in the gold Hall of Fames. He has a podcast with JBL, a Hall of Famer himself, but he didn't get an audience. No one bought tickets to his Hall of Fame. Gerald Briscoe had a sold-out arena saying for his Hall of Fame. JBL, he did it last year. No one showed up. It's embarrassing. I don't know why, but not one person bought a ticket. But listen, they have a podcast called Stories with Gerald Briscoe and JBL. They tell stories. They got Blue Meanie coming on telling stories. I thought that JBL and him hated each other. Turns out they're friends. I got Hornswoggle on the show. Hey, Hornswoggle, you ever hide under the ring for 5 hours? You ever just hide under the ring forever? Tell a story. Anyone ever put a chicken under the ring while you were hiding down there? Check it out. He's got a show on ad-free shows with the great Taylor Williamson, one of the greatest comedians of all time. It's on ad-free shows, the Conrad Thompson thing, and the Conrad's never paid either of us. He owes us both a lot of money. He owes Gerald way more money than he owes me. I don't know why he gets paid more than me. I need the money. Gerald doesn't. Gerald's waiting until he can buy a car to cash in on all the money he needs. Taylor's trying to pay his bills because he's not a Hall of Famer. He doesn't get that WWE pension, you know? So listen, I don't know if Gerald does either, honestly. It's a weird company, but I'm speaking for myself. But listen, most companies skip pension for their Hall of Famers. I don't know what's going on over there. But listen, check out Pro Wrestling. Oh, I can wrap it up. Check him out. Pro Wrestling Tees. Get a Briscoe Brothers Body Shop t-shirt. Check him out on Cameo. Nice. He'll break up with your girlfriend. He'll propose to your wife. He might marry her if she says yes to him. Listen, Gerald Briscoe at FG Briscoe on Twitter, at the FG Briscoe on Instagram. Look up hashtag Briscoe's Big Announcement. It's a bunch of really exciting, goofy stuff. And let me just say for real, Gerald Briscoe, killer wrestler. One of the funniest wrestler I've ever met in my life. I'm sorry, Rocky. So silly and so funny and so kind.
All right, Taylor. That's enough right there.
I was hoping somebody would shut him up.
when you get to that part of it, it's time to wrap up. Vince McMahon would have wrapped you up about 20 seconds ago. He would have sent Triple H out to the damn podium out there and told you to cut it down, you know?
All right. Well, Mr. Gerald Briscoe, it was a pleasure having you on here. Taylor, always wonderful to have you, brother. At Taylor Comedy for Taylor Williamson. Check him out on America's Got Talent this week. It's going to be awesome. As well, Emilio, New Japan Pro Wrestling. I know we got our New Japan Strong talk in there for a quick second, but New Japan Pro Wrestling, New Japan Strong is coming to Dallas, Texas, September 25th and 26th. Tickets are on sale now. We're at the Colwell, the Colwell Center?
Yes.
Colwell Center. Colwell Center. So check out Colwell Center. You can look up the ticket information there or go to njpw1972.com. And then we're heading up north in October, going to your area, not too far from your little hometown over there. We're going to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 3200 Arena, October 16th and 17th. Got some big stuff planned, so you don't want to miss it. Get your tickets now, njpw1972.com or 3200 Arena.
I'm coming.
Putting you on the list, brother.
I mean, you put me on the list. Maybe we'll do something like this. Maybe we'll hang out.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You want to hang out with Balls Deep? If there are any hoots that are coming, that are Talking Shop of Mania fans or just Talking Shop fans in general, come. We hang out. We'll watch the graps together.
Dude, and Trex are going to be there. I know for sure. Well,
Come on now. If Rex and Trex are going to be there, I got to wear my best Ribera jacket.
There you go.
And hang out, man.
Get your
I'm there for that.
Captain
one.
Hat.
My Fear of God hat, because I can't wear a captain hat, but a Fear of God hat, I'm there.
So anybody who wants a little more Talking Shop in their life, make sure to check out the Patreon, patreon.com/Talking Shop. And also make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube, Talking Shop. Our YouTube channel is awesome. We've got a bunch of content coming out that we need to record more stuff because there's so much awesome content on there. We need to get more of it on there. So definitely subscribe. Check the little notifications bell so you get notified whenever we drop a video. And I guess that's it for this week. Am I coming back, Emilio? Do you know what's going on next week, or are the Good Brothers taking back over?
Rock, I have no idea when it comes what they want to do with this show. Who knows? I mean, you're gonna be touring anyway. So who knows? Maybe when you're in Philly, I bring the equipment and we do the Emilio and Rocky
version.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's sit down in person and fucking hang out. Well, yeah, we can get somebody cool to join us like that.
Could we grab either Dickinson or Carl Fredericks?
Oh, let's do it. That's a plan. All right, folks. We'll see you next week. We love you. See you next week. Maybe.